ಜನರಂಜನ Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे हरे
संसार सागरे मग्नं
ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധി കർമ്മഗ്രാഹ്യ ഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാം ഉദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാൽ. ശ്രീമത്ഭാഗവദാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ. മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവാം. ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ. നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവഭാവ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം. ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാദിതരതശ്ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദ യ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തിയൽ സൂരയാഃ. തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ദാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി. ധർമ്മ പ്രോജിത കൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സതാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം. ശ്രീമത്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാ പരൈ ഈശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭി തൽക്ഷണാൽ. നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാദമൃതന്ദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബദ ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസിക ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹം. സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാം. യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം അനുഭേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹകാതരമജുഹാവ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയാ തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിയും ആനദോസ്മി. യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപം അതിഥിദീർഷദാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം നം വ്യാസസൂനും ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം. നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേൽ. കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കലവേണുക്കൊണിതാദൃതാനനിന്ദോഹ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭദാ മുരാരേർ മധുരിം ന കണികാവി കാവി കാവി. നമാവോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻ ഇതി നാമിനേ. നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണീ പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശതാരിണേ ശ്രീമല് ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ. വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശ യാസാം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ശ്രീഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദപരമാണവേ നമ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിതചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദഗീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി. കോമളം കുജയൻവേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമാം. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. സോ ലാസ്റ്റ് Sunday, we were discussing from the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam the story of, or the life of this great personality, devotee Ambarish Maharaj. So, ninth canto generally is divided into 24 chapters. 24 chapters is ninth canto. In that 24 chapters, the first 13 chapters refers to the solar dynasty, and the remaining 11 chapters refers to the lunar dynasty. That is how it is divided, this ninth canto. By presenting these two dynasties, solar dynasty as well as the lunar dynasty, Sri Shugan was saying to Parikshit Maharaj that it is from these two dynasties everything else has come out in this world in due course. In other words, these two dynasties are responsible from whom? You can see this very clearly if you think about it. Throughout this world, if you look, you will notice one thing, that everybody calculates their year either based on sun or on the moon. Some people go by the sun, some people go by the moon. And that is why these two dynasties are so important, solar dynasty and the lunar dynasty. Of course, in the recent times, there were so many other dynasties. They are all the new offshoots which has come out later on in due course. But originally, in this world, in this planet particularly, these two dynasties, solar dynasty and the lunar dynasty, administered this planet. And that is why Sukadeva Goswami, while discussing with Parikshit Maharaj, wanted to explain this point very clearly to him, that from these two dynasties came out the rest of the other dynasties of this world in due course, due to different reasons. So before we proceed in this, you also have to, one or two things I just wanted to mention, it's out of because they are important at this point, that Sukadeva Goswami took care to mention one or two things in this ninth canto, particularly the marriage of Lord Balaram. And that's very significant because the appearance of Krishna and Balaram has not been mentioned yet in the Bhagavatam. But the marriage of Balaram has already been spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's what makes it interesting, because the reason for that is analyzed. Why Sukadeva Goswami spoke about the marriage of a person who is not even born yet has been spoken. So in the Bhagavatam you will find that in Ikshvaku, the son of Shradhadeva or Vaivasvata Manu, and this Ikshvaku had Ikshvaku had many sons, and Ikshvaku has a son by name Anartha, and Anartha had a son by name Raivata. And Raivada had a son by name Kukudmi. So these are the father to son, they were doing the administration. In course of time, during the solar dynasty's administration, Raivada built a palace and a place called Kushasthali. And this Kushasthali became very, very popular because it was a city built in the sea, just like the Krishna has built Dwaraka. It is the same location where Kushasthali existed in the past. So Raivada's son, Kukudmi, had a daughter whom he wanted to get married to, whom he wanted to arrange marriage, wanted to find a proper husband. So Kukudmi thought about this, and Kukudmi decided that he should discuss this matter with Lord Brahma. This is how the kings of the solar dynasty were. When they had any serious problem in the administration or in their management, they could go to the heavenly planets or even right up to Brahmaloka and visit them and discuss the matter with them. So Kukudmi went to Brahmaloka. And when he went to Brahmaloka, what was happening there was, Lord Brahma's assembly is known as Manavadi. So this assembly of Lord Brahma, there was a musical concert going on there. In Lord Brahma's assembly, concert was going on. And Brahma was totally absorbed in the musical concert. So when Kukudmi got there, he has taken his daughter also with him. So they arrived there in the assembly. And since the concert was going on, it was not possible for them to see Lord Brahma. So they sat down in the concert and they listened to this concert. So after listening to the concert for quite a while, when the concert was over, they got an opportunity to talk to Lord Brahma. So when they went to see Lord Brahma, and when Kukudmi spoke about his mission of purpose of coming to Lord Brahma's planet, Brahma started laughing at it. Because what has happened by now, Brahma told him, the people whom you were, since you came here to Brahmaloka, all those people whom you were referring to, they were all dead and gone. Can you imagine what has happened now? That Lord Brahma's planet, a day of Lord Brahma is so long compared to our time in this planet. Just like Brahma has just finished his 50th year and is the 51st year, first day of Lord Brahma is going on at the moment. It's almost close to the middle of the day. And he had spent, although Kukudmi did not know, as soon as he got to Brahmaloka, his lifespan is extended. And he was living there, listening to this music for such a long time, that Brahma told him, since you left your earthly planet and came here, almost 28 Chaturyugas are finished. In other words, one Chaturyugam is how many years? You can calculate. 432,000 years is Kali Yugam. 864 years is Dwapara Yugam. 1.2 million years is Treta Yugam. And 1.8 million years is Satyugam or Krita Yugam. So if you add on 1.8, 1.2, 864 and 432, whatever that comes to. And like that, 28 times of that. So many years have gone since you have gone from here. So Brahma started laughing and telling him that since you arrived here, those people whom you are wanting to get married to, arrange the marriage, and all those people, they have all gone away. Even Kushasthali has gone underneath the water, he said to Kukudmi. And Kukudmi could only understand that the time span in Lord Brahma's planet and our earthly planet is so different. For us, for example, our time here, 6 months of our time is one day in the heavenly planets. That is how the relationships are. Now, on this basis, if you calculate the time, Brahma advised him that all you can do now, if you go down back to the earthly planet again, you will see there that Mahavishnu has appeared there, and Balaram, an incarnation of Vishnu or Krishna, is already there. He is ready for the marriage. Go and marry her to Balaram, to Lord Balaram. And Kukudmi was advised by Brahma in this way. And Kukudmi came down with his daughter, and his name was Revati, and married Revati to Lord Balaram. And that is how that happened. What do we understand from this? We understand from this, this is how Krishna's arrangements are. Krishna controls us through different means. And unless we understand that how Krishna controls us, we start thinking we are independent and we have a lot of freedom to do things. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, apart from the three modes of material nature, which is Krishna's agent, these three modes of material nature is considered to be Krishna's agent because they represent Maya. Maya's potency is these three modes of material nature. So three modes of material nature controls us like three ropes. Prahlad Maharaj says like that. It is considered to be three ropes binding us strongly from which there is no escape. Already everyone is under one of these three modes or a mixed modes of all these three. Nobody has any freedom to come out of it. In addition to that, Kala Karma Grihavam, that time is another factor which Krishna has a good control on us. We think that we have, oh, such a long time, me, I am this, I am that, I am important in this world, this, that and the other. But on top of us, Krishna has put this strong cover of time. In other words, Krishna is saying to us, you have got so much time here, do what you like, but ultimately you are under the control of time. Nobody is free from that. So whether you are here, whether you are in the Brahma Loga, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ah Brahma Bhuvana Loga Punaravartino Arjuna. Krishna says that whether you are in Brahma Logam or elsewhere, you are supposed to accept this change of bodies. That is, Mamubaiti Punarjanma. That if you want to free from this Punarjanmam or change of body, you have to accept the shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, there is no option. That's what Krishna is saying. So, time is another factor in Krishna's control. And this time is such a weapon that Krishna wants to control somebody. The time factor comes in. Mrityu sarvaharasyaham. That due to the factor called the time, eventually one falls into it. Many, many big personalities, powerful personalities in this world, they have come and they have challenged everything. They have challenged the authority of Krishna. They have challenged the authority of the Vedic literature. And they have tried to establish in this world their authority, stamp their mark on it. But it never worked. Why? Because Krishna says to us that you are under the control of time. Kalam. Kalam is kala karma grahava. So kalam is one factor. Apart from the three modes of material nature, we have got time factor involved in that, where you have no escape from that. What else? And the second factor, another important factor, is karmam. Karmam, every living entity is driven by his own karma. And that karmam will continue to follow him as long as he has to accept this different change of bodies. And one body to another, one planet to another, somehow or the other, these things are, he is subjected to the control of karmam. So nobody can free himself from this bondage of karma easily. And that karmam also, Krishna has divided prarabdham, agamam, sanchidam. All three different kinds of karma influences him. Kala karma, grahavam. So in this way, through the time factor, through the karma, through the modes of nature, Krishna has put us into this complicated web of material life. And we have no freedom to come out of it. We have trying very, very hard. And in ignorance, we question everything. Krishna's authority we question. We question about our independence. We were so confident about our independence and we act so independently from Krishna. And the more we become independent, Maya engages us in our three modes of nature, pushes us and binds us so strongly that ultimately we become victimized by that. So Bhagavatam, the message from the Srimad Bhagavatam is that from these stories of the marriage of Kukudmi's daughter, Revati, to Balaram, this small incident Sukadeva Goswami did not forget to mention there. And Parikshit Maharaj got a hint from that this time factor which Krishna controls is far more powerful than what we think about it. And Parikshit Maharaj started thinking that here I am sitting here after throwing this dead snake on the sage's snake, and I've got only 7 days time left. And after that, out of that, almost half the time is gone. What will happen to me? This is the thought came to Parikshit Maharaj. Why did Parikshit Maharaj just thought like that? We also have to think in the same way. That in our span of life in this world, 60, 70 or 80, if we get there that far, 70 or 80, whatever years left, almost half or 40, 50% is already gone. And what is left out is a very, very small amount of time. And in this small amount of time, we are still developing our material desires and developing, trying to build on top of that. And where is this going to come to an end? Krishna is saying here, Sukadeva Goswami says to Parikshit Maharaj, that unless and until one understands that Krishna consciousness is the topmost priority in life, more than anything else, Sukadeva Goswami wanted to tell Parikshit that this is the opportunity, what you have got. 3 days time you still have left. This is what he said to him, told him, that you have still 3 days left, I will talk to you about Krishna. And in this way, Sri Sukadeva Goswami takes Parikshit Maharaj further into that. Now before we move into further discussing the Solar dynasty, because there is a number of kings, very interesting personalities, with very wonderful activities in the Solar dynasty. So we have to discuss all their interesting pastimes and unbelievable activities of these great souls who have managed this planet at a time when Vedic philosophy was in its in its pure form practiced by the kings and the subjects. So that makes it more interesting. But before we go into that, I'll just read that one chapter. There are two chapters of Ambarish Maharaj's story in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And these two chapters of Ambarish's story, what we discussed last time, at least I should read one chapter before we move on to the next story in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the fourth chapter of the ninth canto. which is the story of Ambarish Maharaj, begins here. Shri Shuka Uvacham Nabhago Nabhagavatyam Yamdadam Bhradara Kavim Yavishtam Vivajandhayam Brahmacharinamagadam Bhradaro Bhangtakim Mahyam Bhajama Bidaryam Tava Tvamamaryastada Bhangshorma Putrakadatha Dridaha Ime Angirasa Satram Asadetya Sumedhasa Shashtam Shashtam Ubetyaha Kave Mukhyandi Karmani Tvam Swam Samshaya Sukte Dvai Vaishwadevi Mahatmana Te Swaryando Dhanam Sarubam Te Swaryando Dhanam Satram Parisheshitam Atmanaham Dasyandi Vedadan Gaccha Tatha Sakratavan Yadha Tasmai Dattvaya Yuswargam Te Satra Parisheshitam Tam Gastil Svigarishyandam Purusha Krishna Darshana Vajo Tarado Bhetya Mamedam Vastugam Vasum Mamena Krishabhirdattam Iti Darkhisma Manava Stiyannaude Pidari Prashna Prashtavan Pidaram Tatham Yatnya Vastugadam Sarvam Uchishta Krishaya Kojil Chakrur Vibhagam Rudraya Sadevam Sarvam Arhadim Nabhagastaranamyaha Taveshakilavastugam Ityahame Pida Brahmam Hirasa Tvam Prasadayem Yalte Pidavadadharmam Tonja Satyam Prabhashase Dadamide Mantra Drishe Jnanam Brahmasanadanam Grihanadraminam Dattam Malsatre Parisheshidam Ityuktvandarahido Rudro Bhagavan Satyavalsalam Yamedal Samsmarel Prada Swayamja Susamahidam Kavir Bhavadi Mandratnyo Gadim Jaivatathalpanam Nabhagadam Parishopun Mahabhagavadakriti Naspruchal Brahmashapobi Yamna Pratihadakwajal Shri Rajo Vajam Bhagavan Shodumichami Rajarshe Stasya Dhimada Naprabhu Dhyatra Narmukto Brahmadando Duratyayaham Shri Shuga Vajam Ambarisho Mahabhaga Saptadibhavadi Mahim Avyam Jashriyam Labdhva Vibhavam Chadulam Bhuvim Menedurlabham Pumsam Sarvam Dal Sopnasam Studam Vidvan Vibhavanarvanam Tamo Vishadiyalpuman Vasudeve Bhagavadi Talbhakte Shujasadhushu Prapto Bhavam Param Vishwam Yenedam Loshtaval Spradam Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayor Vajamsi Vaikunda Gunanu Varnani Karohare Mandiram Abjana Dishu Shudim Jagara Chudasalkadodhayim Mukundalingalaya Darshani Drishau Talbhritya Gatra Sparshenga Sangamam Ganam Jadalpada Saroja Saurabhi Shrimat Tulasyam Rasanam Nadarpidim Padau Hare Kshetra Padanu Sarpani Shirokhashi Kesha Padabhi Vandani Kamam Jadasyena Dukama Kamyayam Yathottama Shloka Janashrayaradim Evam Sada Karma Kalabam Atmanam Parediyakye Bhagavatya Dokshaje Sarvatya Bhavam Sarvatya Bhavam Sarvatma Bhavam Vidadan Mahimnam Tannishta Viprabhida Shashasaham Ijeshwamedai Adiyajnam Ishwaram Mahavibhutyo Bajidanga Dakshinai Tadir Vasishtasita Gaudama Devir Dhanyan Nabisrodama Sausaraswadim Yasya Kradushu Girvani Sadasya Hrutvijo Jana Tulya Rubascha Nimisha Vidrashyanda Suvasasam Sorgona Prathido Yasya Manujai Amara Priyaha Shannad Birubagayadvi Uttama Shloga Jeshtidam Samadhyandidan Kama Swarajya Paribhavida Durlabhana Abhisiddhanam Mukundam Khadibashyadaha Sa Ittham Bhakti Yogena Tapo Yuktena Parthiva Sodharmena Harimpinan Sangan Sarvanjaneer Jahom Griheshu Dareshu Sudeshu Bandushu Dibotam Asyandana Vajivatishu Akshayaratna Bharana Yudadishu
ഭക്ഷയ്യരത്ന ഭരണായുധാദിഷു അനന്തകോശേഷകരോദസന്മതി തസ്മാധാതരിശ്ചക്രം വൃത്യനീകമയാവഹം ഏകാന്തഭക്തിഭാവേന പ്രീതോ വൃത്യാവിലക്ഷണം ആരിരാധയിഷു കൃഷ്ണം മഹിഷ്യാതുല്യശീലയ യുക്തസാംവത്സരം വീരോ ദധാരദ്വാദശീവ്രതം വ്രതാന്തേ കാർത്തികേ മാസി ത്രിരാത്രം സമുപോഷിത സ്നാതക്കലാചിൽ കാളിന്ദ്യം ഹരിം മധുവനേർച്ചയൽ മഹാഭിഷേക വിധിന സർവോപസ്കര സമ്പദ അഭിഷിഞ്ച്യാംബരാം കൽപ്പൈ ഗന്ധമാല്യ അർഹനാദിവീം തദ്ഗതാന്തരഭാവേന പൂജയാമാസ കേശവം ബ്രാഹ്മണാംശ്ച മഹാഭാഗാൻ സിദ്ധാർത്ഥാൻ അഭിഭക്തിദാഹ ഗവാം രുക്മവിഷാണീനാം രൂപ്യാംഗ്രീണാം സുവാസസാം പയശീലവയോരൂപം വത്സോപസ്കര സമ്പദാം പ്രഹിനോത്സാദു വിപ്രേഭ്യോ ഗൃഹേഷു ന്യർബുദാനിഷൽ ഭോജയിത്വാ ദ്വിജാനഗ്രേ സ്വാദ്വന്യം ഗുണവത്തമം ലബ്ധകാമൈ അനുജ്ഞാനം പാരണായോപചക്രമേ തസ്യ തർഹതിഥി സാക്ഷാൽ ദുർവാസ ഭഗവാന ഭൂൽ തമാനർച്ചാതിഥിം ഭൂവ പ്രത്യുത്ഥാനാസനാർഹണൈ യാജേഭ്യ വഹാരായ പദമൂലമുപാഗതാഃ പ്രതിനന്ദ്യ സദദ്യാജ്ഞാം കർത്തുമാവശ്യകം ഗദാ നിമമജ്ജ ബൃഹദ്യായൻ കാളിന്ദീ സലിലേ ശുഭേം മുഹൂർത്താർദ്ധാവശിഷ്ടായാം ദ്വാദശ്യാം പ്രാരണാം പരണം പ്രതി ചിന്തയാമാസ ധർമ്മജ്ഞോ ദ്വിജൈ തദ്ധർമ്മസങ്കടേ ബ്രാഹ്മണാതിക്രമേ ദോഷോ ദ്വാദശ്യാം യദവാരണേ യൽകൃത്വാ സാധുമേ ഭൂയ അധർമ്മോ വാ നമാം സ്പൃശേൽ അംഭസാ കേവലേ നാഥ കരിഷ്യേ വ്രതവാരണം പ്രാഹുര ഭക്ഷണം വിപ്ര അശിതം നാശിതം ജതൽ ഇവപ്രാശ്യരാജശിശ്ചിന്തയൻ മനസാച്യുതം പ്രത്യാചഷ്ടഗുരു ശ്രേഷ്ഠ ദ്വിജാഗമനമേവ സാം ദുർവാസാ യമുനാകൂലാൽ കൃതാവശ്യകമാഗത രാജ്ഞാഭിനന്ദിതസ്തസ്യ ബുബുദേ ചേഷ്ടിതം ധിയാ മന്യുയാ പ്രജലൽ ഗാത്രോ ഭൃഗുടീകുടിലാ കടിലാനനാം ബുഭുക്ഷിതശ്ച സുതരാം കൃതാഞ്ജലിമഭാഷദാം അഹോമസ്യ നൃശംസസ്യ ശ്രീയോന്മത്തസ്യ പശ്യത ധർമ്മവ്യതിക്രമം വിഷ്ണോ അഭക്തേ ശേഷമാനിനാം യോ മാമതിഥിമായാദം ആതിഥ്യേന നിമന്ത്രജ അദത്വാ ഭുങ്ക്തവാം സ്തസ്യ സദ്യസ്തേ ദർശയേ ഫലം ഏവം ബ്രുവാണമുൽകൃത്യ ജഡാം രോഷവിദീപിത തയാ സധർമ്മമേ തസ്മൈ കൃത്യാം കാലാനവോപമാം താമാപദന്തിം ജ്വലതിം അസിഹസ്താം പദാഭുവം വേപയന്തിം സമുദ്വേക്ഷ്യ നജജാല പദാ നൃപാഃ പ്രാഗ്ദിഷ്ടം വൃത്തിരക്ഷായം പുരുഷേണ മഹാത്മന ദദാഹ കൃത്യാം താം ചക്രം ക്രുദ്ധാഹിമിവ പാവകാം തദവിദ്രവദുദ്രീക്ഷ്യ സ്വപ്രയാസം ജനിഷ്ഫലം ദുർവാസാദുദ്രുവേ ഭീതോ ദിക്ഷൂ പ്രാണപരീപ്സയാം തമന്വധാവൽ ഭഗവദ്രദാംഗം ദാവാഗ്നിരുദ്ധൂതശിഖോ യഥാഹിം തഥാനുശക്തം മുനിരീക്ഷമാണോ ഗുഹാം വിവിക്ഷു പ്രസസാരമേരോ ദിശോ ന ഭഷ്മാം വിവരാൻ സമുദ്രാം ലോകാൻ സപാലാം സ്ത്രുതിവം ഗദസ യദോ യദോ ധാവതി തത്ര തത്ര സുദർശനം ദുഷ്പ്രസഹം ദദർശാം അലബ്ധനാദസ്സ യദാ കുതശ്ചിൽ സന്ത്രസ്തചിത്തോരണമേഷമാനഃ ദേവം വിരിഞ്ചം സമഗാദ്വിദാദസ്ത്രാഹ്യാത്മയോനേജിത തേജസോമാം ശ്രീബ്രഹ്മോവാചാം സ്ഥാനം മദീയം സഹ വിശ്വമേതൽ ക്രീഡാവസാനേ ദുപരാർദ്ധസംജ്ഞേ ഭ്രൂഭംഗമാത്രേണ ഹി സംധിദക്ഷോ കാലാത്മനോ യസ്തിരോ ഭവിഷ്യതി അഹംഭവോ ദക്ഷഭൃഗുപ്രധാനാം പ്രദേശഭൂദേശ സുരേശ മുഖ്യാം സർവേ വയം യന്നിയമം പ്രപന്നാം മൂർധന്യർപ്പിതം ലോകഹിതം വഹാമാം പ്രത്യാഖ്യാതോ വിരിഞ്ജേന വിഷ്ണുചക്രോപതാപിത ദുർവാസാശരണം യാത സർവം കൈലാസവാസിനം ശ്രീരുദ്രവാചാം വയം നദാത പ്രഭവാമഭൂമി യസ്മിൻ വരേണ്യേപ്യജീവകോശാഃ ഭവന്തി കാലേന ഭവന്തി ഹീദൃശ സഹസ്രശോ യതു വയം ഭ്രമാമാം അഹം സനൽകുമാരശ്ച നാരദോ ഭഗവാനജ കപിലോപാന്തരതമോ ദേവലോ ധർമ്മമാസുരീം മരീചി പ്രമുഖാശ്ചാന്യേ സിദ്ധേശാ പരദർശന വിദാമന വയം സർവേ യന്മായാം മായയാ വൃതാഃ തസ്യ വിശ്വേശ്വരസ്യേദം ശസ്ത്രം ദുർവിഷഹം ഹിന ത്വമേവ ശരണം യാഹി ഹരിസ്തേശം വിധാസ്യതീം తతో నిరాశో దుర్వాసాపదం భగవదో యయౌ వైకుంఠాఖ్యం యదధ్యాసే శ్రీనివాస శ్రేయాసః సందహ్యమానో యదశస్త్రవన్యిన తల్పాదమూలే పదిత సవేభూ ఆహ్ అచ్యుదానంద సదీప్సిత ప్రభో కృదాగసం పావహి విశ్వభావనాం అజానదే అజానదాదే పరమానుభావం కృతం మయాఖం భవద ప్రియాణం విదేహి తస్యావజనిం విధాద ముచ్చేదయన్నా నిదదే నారగోపి శ్రీ భగవానువాచాం అహం భక్తపరాధీనో అస్వతంత్రమివ ద్విజ సాధువర్గ్రస్తహృదయో భక్తే భక్తజనప్రియాహం నహమాల్పానమాశాసే మల్భక్తై సాధువేరువినా శ్రయం చాత్యధికం జాత్యంతికీం బ్రహ్మన్ ఏషాం గతిరహం పరా ఏ దారాగారపుత్రాప్తన్ ప్రాణాన్వితమిమం పరం హిత్వా మాం శరణం యాదా కథం తాం త్యక్తుముత్సహే మయి నిర్భక్తహృదయ సాధవ సమదర్శన వశీకుర్వంది మాం భక్త్యా సల్స్త్రియ సల్పదిం యథా మల్సేవయా ప్రదీతం చ సాలోక్యాదిచతుష్టయం నిశ్చంది సేవయా పూర్ణం కుదోన్యల్ కాల విద్రుదం సాధవో హృదయం మహ్యం సాధూనాం హృదయం త్వహం మదన్యల్ తే నజానంది నాహం తేభ్యో మనాగవీ ఉపాయకదయిష్యామి తవ విప్రశ్నుష్వదల్ అయం ఆత్మా విజారస్తే యదస్తం యాదు వై భవాన్ సాధుష ప్రహితం తేజ ప్రహర్తు కురిదే శివం తపో విద్యాచ విప్రాణాం నిశ్రేయసకరే ఉభే త ఏవ దుర్వినీతస్య కల్పేతే కర్తురన్యథాహం బ్రహ్మం సల్గచ్చ భద్రం దే నాభాగదనయం నృపం క్షమావయ మహాభాగం తదా శాంతిర్భవిష్యది శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాపురాణే పరమహంసం సంహితాయాం నవమస్కందే అంబరీషజరిదే చతుర్థోధ్యాయ సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవిందం. సో ఇన్ దిస్ టూ చాప్టర్స్ ద స్టోరీ ఆఫ్ అంబరీష్ మహారాజ్ ఇస్ డిస్కస్ ఇన్ ది శ్రీమద్భాగవతం. So, after this, Ambarish Maharaj, in the Bhagavadam, in the Shrimad Bhagavadam, continuing with the dynasty of Ikshvaku, or the solar dynasty, we find his son, then his son, then his son, like that it goes on. So, some of them are mentioned in a very limited way, because there was nothing much significant to mention. But in some cases, there were some important things, developments, so that's been mentioned by Sudev Goswami. So, Ikshvaku had a son by name Vikutshi. Vikutshi was his eldest son. So, this Vikutshi has done something seriously wrong. And the result was that he was expelled from the kingdom. The father expelled his son from the kingdom and told him to go to the forest and live there. So, how did that happen? Because Vikutshi, the Kshatriyas have got this one habit, what is known as hunting the animals in the forest. For various reasons, they are allowed to do that because of their type of engagement. And also, these Kshatriya nature, by nature itself, they are a lot of influence of the Rajogunam in them. And this Rajogunam will often impel them or compel them to act in some way or the other. So normally, this is an outlet for them to go to the forest and hunt the animals. And Kshatriya kings, for practicing in their warfare, they use these animals in the forest as a way to show their courage and fighting spirit. And in that way, Vikutshi was sent to the forest. But in this particular time, when Vikutshi went in the forest, Vasishtha Maharshi, who was the priest of the solar dynasty altogether from the very beginning, from Ikshvaku's time, Vasishtha Maharshi was requested by the father of Vikutshi, who is Ikshvaku, that he wanted to perform the Shraddha ceremony of Shraddhadeva. Now, what is the Shraddha ceremony? Why Shraddha ceremony is so different from the other ceremonies? Because the above Shraddham, Krishna says to Uddhava in the Bhagavadam, Shraddham kuryam na vistaram, that one should not make a big thing out of, like marriage and other ceremonies. One shouldn't spend too much money and too much energy in Shraddha ceremony. That is one thing. Secondly, for Shraddha ceremony, one should do it in such a way with the utmost Shraddha. Shraddha, that is how this word came out, Shraddham. the one ceremony that is performed with the highest Shraddha. Shraddha means with the complete seriousness, one has to do that. Therefore, the Shraddha ceremony which Ikshvaku wanted to perform for his father, he told Vikutshi when he went to the forest. This particular Shraddham was known as Ashtaka Shraddham, which Kshatriyas normally perform. So he told Vikutshi to bring the meat for that. In Shraddha ceremony, for Kshatriyas, it's particularly allowed. So it is not a lot of meat. They just take a small few pieces. That's all. In the offering for the in the plate, they offer that. That is a system among them. Now, Vikutshi was told, and that too, there is specific injunctions, which animal is allowed to be used for the Shraddha ceremony. Rabbits is one of them. There's a few like that, whose meat is allowed for the Shraddha ceremony. So Vasishtha and Ikshvaku instructed Vikutshi to go to the forest and bring this meat for the Shraddha ceremony. But our Vikutshi got attracted into the, naturally, he had this attraction for hunting and completely forgotten about this, what he was told to do. So he kept hunting the animals, and eventually when he came to his memory that he had to bring back this meat, he killed some rabbits. And when he killed the rabbits, he also felt hungry at the same time. Unfortunately, he ate some of this rabbit's meat. Vikutshi ate that. And then what he did was, the rest of it, what he thought that can be used for the ceremony, he packed it and brought it back home nicely to the king. Ikshvaku took it and offered it to Vasishtha Maharshi for the Shraddha ceremony. Vasishtha Maharshi looked at it. By his jnana drishti, he was able to know that already Vikutshi has eaten some of it. So when he realized that, he told the king Ikshvaku that this Vikutshi doesn't have any understanding of these things. I think he should not become a king here. He should leave this place straight away. And he told Ikshvaku what Vikutshi has done, because once anything for offering to any of the Vedic sacrifices, not only Vedic sacrifices in temple or anywhere else, if it has to be, it has not to be consumed by anybody, it should be pure. In fact, to tell you the reality is that even bhogam, when it's offered to Krishna, it should not be seen by anybody. It's not proper to be seen by others. Because anyone, normally conditioned soul, has this tendency when he sees the food, naturally will look at it. And in the Mahabharata, there is a story about it, a very important story. Mahabharata begins with the story of a dog and finishes with it and the story of the dog, same dog. This dog came and looked at a sacrifice was going on. And this dog's mother, Sarama, that was her name, came and the dog came and wandered around where the sacrifice was going on. Dog came and looked at it. So immediately they beat up the dog and threw him out from there. So when they beat the dog up, they got so upset with the mother of the dog, got so upset with the sages there, that she's complained about it, that why did you beat up my son? They said, look, he has looked at the offerings, what was being meant for the sacrifice. So that is how the system is, that it has to be kept so much, it's considered to be pure if it's not by seen by others or touched by others. So it is naturally something which has to be very carefully done. So this is necessary. And particularly in temples where the standard of worship has to be much higher than worship at home. At home, when you do these things, there is always some practical problems. Because at home, we have family members, and family members always have the tendency to see what's going on in the kitchen. And that's difficult to resist. And whether it's father, children, mother, everybody has access to the kitchen. So it is impossible to bring that standard at the temple at home. It's not possible. Unless and until everyone is so trained so nicely and has all the facilities at home to do it properly. So therefore, in temples, these things has to maintain a much higher standard. Because people look up towards the temple for guidance and direction in all these things. So there, the standard should not drop. The temple standard should always be very, very high. Because temple guides the society in spiritual life. So if the temple standard drops, it affects everyone's standard also. So this is for this reason that in the temple these standards are to be kept much higher than elsewhere. So in this case, for example, our Vigutshi brought the meat back, and Vasishtha Maharshi, through his Jnana Drishti, that means Vasishtha Maharshi knew by seeing this, immediately in his mind it stuck that this meat has been consumed already by Vigutshi. He told this to Ikshvaku. Ikshvaku told Vigutshi, this is the instruction from Vasishtha. Have you done this? Vigutshi said, yes, I have eaten some of it. Balance it. He says, how can you offer this to Shradadeva, my father, who is the origin of the Solar dynasty? This is absolutely, I mean, you are not qualification for to become the next king in this plan, in this kingdom. Rather, you should leave and go to the forest. And Vigutshi very carefully accepted the instruction and went to the forest. And then Shraddha ceremony was performed, of course, not with the meat. They had brought back something else. But what is interesting is here, Vigutshi went to the forest. Ikshvaku took instruction from Vasishtha Maharshi. He also went to the forest, practiced spiritual life, and went back to the spiritual world. Krishna refers to this Ikshvaku in the Bhagavad Gita, as you know, that Imam Vivasvade Yogam Proktavanaham Avyayam Vaivasvan Manuve Praha Manu Ikshvakuve Bravil. That Ikshvaku Krishna is referring to is this Ikshvaku we are talking about in this ninth canto. So after this Ikshvaku is gone, after some time Vasishtha Maharshi found out Vigutshi has been practicing austerities in the forest. So when Vasishtha Maharshi realized that Vigutshi has come up to his standard of becoming a good Kshatriya and capable of administering the kingdom, Vasishtha Maharshi brought him back from the forest, back to the administration again. So Vigutshi took over the administration. With Vasishtha's help, he performed many, many sacrifices after that, and Vigutshi also went back to the spiritual world. So this is one of the sons of Ikshvaku, who is a very prominent member in that family, and that is briefly mentioned by Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. And after this incident, if you go on, there is so many names mentioned, one after the other. Then the next important personality you find in the Srimad Bhagavatam is Yuvanashva. This is another interesting king in the same dynasty. What was so interesting about Yuvanashva? Yuvanashva's interesting side is that Yuvanashva had no children. So naturally, he wanted to continue. Naturally, Kshatriya kings are very anxious to have the progeny to continue with the kingdom, the administration. Their concern is that in the modern administration, we haven't got that concern. There's so many people lined up to take the administration in control. So there is no problem. But in the olden days, when the kings ruled this planet, their main concern was they have to have their progeny ready for being trained up for the next job, for the next administration. And that training is so vital and so critical for them. As a prince, they are trained up in the administration, and eventually they take over the administration at the right time when the father leaves home and goes to the forest for performing their austerities and penances. So in that process, Yuvanashva became king. Yuvanashva had no issues. He had no children. So Yuvanashva decided, he invited all the brahmanas and told them that somehow or the other, I have to have a son, he said. So the brahmanas decided there is a sacrifice known as, it is not a sacrifice, it is a ceremony known as Pumsavanam. Pumsavanam is a ceremony performed to impregnate the wife of the king. So this queen was supposed to be impregnated. And what they do is in Pumsavanam, that the brahmanas sit together and they chant the mantra and make a pot of water so powerful, it is infected with this power of this mantra, that it is supposed to be offered to the wife of the king, and she consumes that, and in due course she is supposed to become pregnant. This is what the potency of that Pumsavanam ceremony is. In Vedic literature, you will find so many different things mentioned, and most of them are so interesting also, that some of the things what we are doing today in the name of modern science, for the name of conceiving a child, and eventually ends up in disaster in some way or the other. And not only it becomes a disaster, sometimes everyone, the ones who are conducting the research, one who are using it for conception, the government, the people, every single person is always doubtful about this whole process. They're always thinking, is this all correct what we are doing? And this fear is always in their mind. But they're still they're doing it because in their desire to have the children, they are doing all these things. But in many cases, it ends up in some troubles also, in problems also. We know that everyone who is reading newspapers and who is listening to the news knows these things, what is going on in this world in the name of increasing the fertility and increasing the progeny, whatever. Those who don't have children, they are crying for having children. Those who have got children, they are crying of having the problem of children. So one way or the other, they are all crying anyway. So this is the interesting part of this material world. Material nature and Krishna's arrangement is such that whether you have it or you don't have it, you still have to cry in this world, in one way or the other. So anyway, they are seeing all these things, still they are struggling to have some children, some or the other. And the amount of money that is spent on this research work is beyond our understanding. It is so much. Whether it's in America or in Britain or Europe, anywhere else, this is another task for the scientist to show his capacity and for him to challenge the material nature and Krishna. Anyway, that goes on side by side. But here, Pumsavanam was a ceremony what was done by the Brahmanas. Brahmanas have chanted these mantras from the Vedas. The Vedic mantras were chanted. And the Pumsavanam, the water, they have chanted the water. Holding this pot in the hand, water in the hand, they were chanting this. They chanted it for days together and they kept it in one place to be given to the queen. But it so happened that at one particular day, one night, Yuvanasya was wandering around in this area where there were Brahmanas were performing this ceremony, Pumsavanam ceremony. So somehow or the other, at that particular point when he was walking through, it was night time, the water was kept in the pot somewhere. When he got there, when he was passing through, he felt a desire to drink drink something, felt so thirsty. And what he thought was, he saw this pot sitting there with water in it. He thought somebody has stored water there for drinking. He took it and drank that water. Yuvanashwa took the water and drank it. Just see how Krishna's plans works in this world. The very next day, when Brahmanas came to know about it, immediately they thought to themselves, this is known as, what is known as providence. That something has been done with so much care and so much attention, but the king has taken the water and drank the water. And how did this happen? The only answer in the Srimad Bhagavatam is Ishwarecha. That means it was Krishna's desire that it should happen like that. That he took that water and drank it. Now, the mantra won't fail. Mantra has to act. No matter whether it is Yuvanashu or Ikshvaku, no matter anybody. Mantra has to act. Yuvanashu became pregnant. That was the result. So, not only Yuvanashu became pregnant, Brahmana told him, there is nothing we can do about it. The water is gone in and it has got the potency in it. So Yuvanashva became pregnant, and ultimately the Brahmanas had to cut his belly and take the baby out from the belly. They have an operation like that now also, isn't it? When they go to the hospital, this seems to be the easiest process now doctors take to. Because to avoid all the complications, cut it and take it out quickly and finish the business. This is their approach anyway. So, this is what they have done. I don't know what the name of that, but cesarean, yes. That's the operation, yes. They performed that. So, obviously, cesarean was existing then also. Our Brahmanas did the cesarean, and from Yuvanashwa came out a boy, a nice looking, good, very attractive boy came out. But there is no mother. Where is the mother? The father is there, standing there, with all belly stitched up. And the son is lying there. So at that time, the Brahmanas realize the problem. Who is going to look after the baby now? Because you can see, the role of mother is something which you can't ignore easily. Without her, none of us will be here in this world. We all, men, when they grow up, they think, oh, we are so independent, we can manage everything. But they forget the fact that one day, they were dependent on a woman to come to this world. And with their mercy, how much they have cared for us. All this is forgotten at that stage. Why? By then, Rajogunam has taken over. This is how it happens. In Satugunam, all these thoughts will come. But in Rajogunam, everything is forgotten. Mother is forgotten, father is forgotten, everybody is forgotten. I am the man of the world then. So our boy, this boy who came out, he had no mother. So at that time, the Brahmanas thought that we should ask somebody from the heavenly planets to come and look after this boy. Indra himself came there. And Indra's thumb was touched by nectar. So what did Indra do? Indra told this boy, Mom, Dada, I am your mother. And put this finger into this boy's mouth. Gave him the nectar from his hand to this boy. And he sucked that. He sucked that finger. So the result was that because Indra spoke this word, Mam Dada, I am your mother, the boy got the name as Mam Dada. He became the next king, next prince to grow up there. And he was known by this name as Mam Dada. He became, in course of time, Mam Dada became Mam Dada. And that is the next prince in that solar dynasty. So Mam Dada grew up as a prince and became very, very powerful. He became so powerful that everyone was frightened of him. And he was invited by Indra to come to the heavenly planet. Because Indra, seems those days, that they were able to communicate with the heavenly planet so freely that kings were going there to fight the war. They were coming here to help the kings here. Like this constant communication seems to be going on in those days. They were able to do that because they lived a life according to the Vedic rules. The Vedas give us this understanding that through the Vedic process, one is able to approach the higher living entities in this creation. That is the beauty of the Vedic literature. The Vedic literature gives us a certain flexibility and a certain leverage to contact living entities who are higher than us. We shouldn't think that we are the highest in this creation. This is the biggest foolishness. There are so many other living entities higher than us. Gandharvas, Siddhas, Charanas, Kinnaras, so many other, all the demigods and so many others is mentioned. There's an endless list of them who are by many means superior to us. That is, you will see in the fourth canto, it is mentioned also when Brahma asked Purvachiti, an Apsaras woman, to come and become the wife of Agnidra. Purvachiti started crying. Agnidra was the king of this planet. And Brahma has told Purvachiti, because Agnidra has performed so much penances to get a good wife. This was his whole goal of life, to get a good wife. You know, in the fourth canto, this difference between Priyavrata and Agnidra, two father and son, both had two different goals from the very beginning. Priyavrata wanted to become Srinarada Muni, like Srinarada Muni. Priyavrata has performed penances, and the result was that Priyavrata married twice after that. So Agnidra thought, my father got married after performing penances. So he must have performed penances to please Lord Brahma. So let me do the same thing. So only thing difference was, Priyavrata's desire was to become like Narada Muni, whereas Agnidra's desire was to get a good wife. So when Agnidra pleased Brahma, Brahma said to Purvachiti, she was an Apsaras woman, a beautiful woman in the heavenly planets, and told her, go and become his wife and stay there for 100 years, he said to her. Purvachiti started crying. She said, for these Gandharvas and Apsaras and all that, when they think about human species, we are like worms for them. That's how they think about us. Don't think that they are not racist. They are also racist there. They don't treat us very nicely. They think of us like that. Unfortunately, it is like that. Because when they see our body and our habits and our realizations, they don't want to associate with us. Now, nobody can stop this. It is unfortunately the creation is such. So this Viprachiti started crying. Viprachiti said, no, I don't want to go. Why you are pushing me there? He said. So Brahma said, at least only 100 years. Just go and do it. Finish and come back. Because he has pleased me by his penances, he said. So Viprachiti said, I'll go and have a look at him, what it's like there. She is coming with a little bit of a disgust in here to this heavenly planet. When she came here, she saw Agnidra First, when she saw him, she said, she didn't realize there is also people in this world also, somewhat not bad looking, she said. But only after during having a conversation, she realized that Agnidra was not a bad man. He was nice to associate with. So instead of spending 100 years, she spent much more than that with Agnidra here. So this is what I was saying, that these living entities in the higher planets, they have a higher standard of life, higher realizations and higher understanding of life. So they actually never don't want to associate with us. And in this case also, what we were saying about Mandhadav also, Mandhadav had this opportunity to associate with the heavenly planets, and it seems that they were inviting kings from here in some instances to go there to assist them. In Katwanga's case also, Katwanga is also known as Dileepa. Isan is another king in the Solar dynasty. So this success is possible only because these kings on those days in the Tridayugam, they had such a fixed up attitude in the Vedic traditions that they followed it strictly, and the result was that they were able to communicate with the higher living entities in the higher planets and systems. So our Mandhadav became king, and this Mandhadav became so powerful, and he managed the planet very well. And eventually, in course of time, Mandhadav, not realizing that he had to come to fight with a king called as Lavanasura. So this fight between Mandhadav and Lavanasura is mentioned in the Valmiki's Ramayana. There talks about in detail about it. Lavanasura, killing of Lavanasura comes later in that. So Lavanasura killed Mandhadav because Mandhadav was not aware of the strength of Lavanasura. Lavanasura had a trident with which he was able to kill anyone at that time. And Mandhadav was supposed to approach him when he didn't have the trident with him. But unfortunately, Mandhadav didn't know about it, but apparently Mandhadav was killed by Lavanasura in a fight, which is explained in the Valmiki's Ramayana. So this Mandhadav had few sons and 50 daughters. So that was Mandhadav's family. Mandhadav's family was quite big. And among these daughters, 50 daughters, Mandhadav had a very, very nice administration. He has set it up. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to this, that this 50 daughters have become to the marriageable age. So naturally it's a duty of the father to find a husband for them. And Mandhadav was in search for a proper princess for them to marry these princesses. So during that time, this Mandhadav was controlling the administration or running the administration. There was a great sage who lived at that time. His name was Saubhari. Saubhari. Though this Saubhari is an interesting personality in the sense that Saubhari performed a lot of, like our Durvasamuni, a lot of austerities and penances. Performed a lot of it, acquired a lot of strength from that. So the result was, all these great sages, you will see, that they had so much yogic power in their hands, in command. They could control so many things. And for them, all this material creation and opulences were not much of a significant thing. Because due to their once you have acquired something in this world, then you don't feel any value for it. This is the nature of this world. Till you become a millionaire, £1 million is a lot of money. But once you become a millionaire, you are targeting at billions then, after that, isn't it? So it's the same thing. All material opulences are like that. And our Saubhari also, when he went into practicing austerities in Kalindi River, what has happened was that inside the water, he was performing his Brahma Dhyanam. He was engaged in his transcendental meditation. While performing the meditation, he performed some fish having a sexual relationship with each other. Apparently, that has agitated his mind. Can you imagine? A sage who has performed so much austerity, so much penances and everything, in the flick of a second, in a second time, whole mind got affected by that. Lost everything. All the austerity finished, penance finished, everything. Came back straight to the palace of Mandhadav. Came to Mandhadav and told him, "I want to get married," he said. Because when the sages come, the kings have no option except to ask for blessings and mercy. That's all. Because these sages are so powerful that if you displease them, you are in trouble. If you try to please them also, you are in trouble. Because when they come in their saintly clothes, full of matted hair and all long beard. The body, because of austerities and penances, looks like ready to drop off any time. 90 years, 100 years old, like today's age, I'm saying. So when Manthadav came and requested, Saubhari came and requested Manthadav that I want to marry, he said to her, said to him, that, when the sage was walking into the palace, the daughters saw them from their apartments, the sage coming in, Saubhari. So Saubhari saw these girls there in the apartments. Saubhari said to himself, then why shouldn't I ask to marry one of these girls, Manthadav's daughters? So straight away he put the request to Manthadav. Manthadav was in a dilemma, didn't know what to do, because the sage looks virtually finished in life. And when one has come to such a degree of renunciation and detachment and all, it is better not to get into married life, because then married life is also a disaster. So there has to have some attraction in married life. Otherwise, how can this married life go on? So Manthadav didn't know what to answer Saubhari. Saubhari requested for a daughter in marriage. So Saubhari, Manthadav thought for a while, instead to escape the best route now. He was also very clever. He replied to Saubhari, please go to the apartments where all the girls are there. You can ask any one of them you like. If any of them agree to marry you, please marry. You can get married. Because otherwise, if I select somebody, it will cause problems. Let them make the decision themselves, he said. Saubhari understood Manthadav's mind. That means Manthadav is doubting about my capacity, he said. Saubhari thought himself. What did he do? He slowly walked into the apartments where the princesses were there. Before he got there, he changed his form. And there is a description in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the nature of Saubhari at that time. With his yogic power, he changed his body. And if you look at him at that time, you will think as though he is Kamadeva personified, Cupid has personified, has appeared there on the spot. And when he walked into the apartments, every single daughter, all the 50 of them, wanted to marry him. So this is what has happened. Saubhari knew what is to be done. So with the result was that he married all 50 of them in one lot. He took them, married them, and took them away from there. Manthadav was pleased. Saubhari was also pleased. Saubhari married all these 50 girls. And there is a description of Saubhari's householder life in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You can read that. If you remember, in the third canto, what Kardama Rishi said with Devahuti Devi, when she wanted to marry, what did he do? He asked Krishna, can you send me a palace for my householder life? And Krishna sent him a palace from the spiritual world for him. And that is the ashrama where both Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi had taken bathed in the Bindusaras and changed their bodies to enjoy their householder life. If you read that description in the third canto, and if you read the facilities they had, that spaceship which was taking them in all over the creation, in all over the universe, even to the heavenly planets, and the heavenly planets and their garden, Nandanam, Chaitraratham, places like that, they were traveling in this spaceship. And the number of years they enjoyed their householder life, this is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And those who are today living in this world, if you read that description, even they will feel envious about it. That is the kind of householder, grahastha ashramam, what Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi has performed. Even people who have got the best facilities in this world today will envy when they read about that description in the third canto. So just like that, exactly like Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi, our Saubhari Maharshi also has shown his yogic power at that time. With the power of yoga, he created such a facilities for them that when these 50 girls, he married them and he had a fantastic householder life with them. And one day, Manthadav came to visit them to see his daughters. when he came and saw the standard of life of the household life of Saubhari Maharshi and his daughters, he was ashamed, because as a king he did not have that what they had. When he realized that the daughters were happy in marriage with Saubhari, that he went back straight away, didn't spend any time there. Mentions in the Bhagavatam like that. So this Saubhari Maharshi continued his married life, but one day he came to his senses. This is how everybody is, that when you go into household life, you'll go with full energy and full enthusiasm. Oh, I'll get married, I'll have my house, I'll have my mortgage, I'll have my bank balance, this, that and the other. And thinking that from now on, I'm going to be a man of the world. But after some time, this householder ashram has got this one problem, that only when bills have to be paid, the householder start getting worried. That up to that point, everything is nice. In the beginning, it's all very good. But when the children start coming, and then when the responsibilities start building up, only then the householder start worrying about it. And then eventually, it gives him a good lesson that Krishna consciousness is a better option. So, Saubhari also has, by Krishna's grace, that is how it's mentioned, Krishna's grace, one day he came to his senses, that it is better that from what a position I have fallen into this condition. He realized that I was performing such austerities and penances, and I have made so much progress in spiritual life. Lot of my tapashakti, or the strength from that austerities and penances, I have lost in enjoying this material world. When he came to his senses, he gave up that straight away, performs. But because they had such a long lifespan, they could do that. They went back to the forest, performed penances again, went back to the spiritual world. So Saubhari did like that. This story is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this Saubhari story is very, very interesting also, because of this, that even a great sage, this can happen. It's not that it's happened to only ordinary people. Why is Srimad Bhagavatam saying all these stories to us? This is also we have to think, isn't it? Is it that some stories you are just saying like that so people can enjoy listening to the stories? No, that's not the point. The point is that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning, while referring to householder life, this is all particularly important for householders. Why? Because majority of the people in this world are householders. Brahmacharis are very, very few. And those who do not get entangled in family life are very, very few. In householder life, there are three major things which will hold him very strongly to the material world. They are known in the Shastra as Eshanatrayam. Eshanatrayam means these three objects. What are they? Putra Eshanam, Dara Eshanam, Vitha Eshanam. That is how it is referred. It is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it is in the 6th canto or 7th canto. Somewhere it is mentioned about. Eshanatrayam is mentioned there. So, Vitheshanam, Putreshana, and Dareshanam. What does that mean? It means a householder has attachment to three things very strongly in this world. One, attachment to the wife. Secondly, attachment to his own children. And thirdly, attachment to the wealth. Vitham. Vitham means wealth. So, Vitheshanam, Putreshanam, and Dareshanam. These three things, it is very difficult to break it up from that. Because the nature of the householder life is such that when one enters into it, for a man and for a woman also, it is not different. It's mentioned here for a householder, because generally while talking about all this, it's men's case, but it is not different for women also. Once they enter into that, these three things unknowingly will take control of our mind. Whether we like it or not, we will fall into that. And once you've fallen into these three things, Vitheshanam, Putreshana, or Eshanatrayam, as it's mentioned, it is a very difficult thing to come out of it. For example, Saubhari Maharshi's case, it was Dareshanam. That means attachment to the wife. That was holding him back. A lot of his time he wasted in his life because of this attachment to the family life. What has attracted him to come into that? In the case of in the case of Nabhaga's brothers, if you remember that Ambarish Maharaj's father, Nabhaga, and all his other brothers who tried to cheat him, Why? They wanted to take the wealth away. Because their attachment, they were all householders. So their attachment was for wealth. So when they got attracted to the wealth, when the need for wealth came, they were willing to sacrifice everything. So different incidents are telling us that if we do not take care of these things in life, those very things whom we got attracted to will become impediments in spiritual life. That is what it is pointing out. Today we may think that in household life, okay, we got attracted to the family life, attracted to money, attracted to children, all these things are there. But if this attraction is going to destroy our spiritual life, one has to take guard against that. And so it's only to indicate these things, that these different experiences of these great personalities are brought into Srimad Bhagavatam. Saubhari Maharshi is telling us, don't become like me. That's what it is. All the personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam is always telling us, either you become like me or don't become like me. Ambarish Maharaj is telling us, become like me. Saubhari is telling us, don't become like me. So you can see different personalities have their experiences in this world, and their spiritual life, how it flourished, you can see from their life how it all got up and got better day by day by engaging in these different principles what they followed. It is from this that the sages have created Srimad Bhagavatam, from the experience of all these devotees. Because from these devotees' life you can understand what one devotee who wants to advance in spiritual life should take into consideration in his own life. Because if he doesn't do that, you cannot have everything in this world. If you want to have spiritual life also, you have to make sacrifices in this life. And that sacrifice, what they have made, Ambarish Maharaj and others. Ambarish Maharaj was a householder. He was not a sannyasi. He was not a brahmachari. He was a householder. But being a householder, he became one of the topmost devotees. How? Because the approach in life was such that all this is when engaged in running the administration, being engaged in serving the people and doing everything else, mind was focused, attached to Krishna. That is what his success was. That in spite of entangled in all these things, Ambarish Maharaj was given a position even higher than Durvasa Muni, who was a sannyasi, who was a sage, given up all family life, stayed in the forest, performed penances, everything. What did Krishna say to him? That Yanam tapascha vinayanyudameva manyam yahambarisha padameva bhajedi bhuman. Go and worship Ambarish, lotus feet, he said to, Krishna said to Durvasa Muni. So from this you can see that what is important is, if Krishna consciousness takes priority in life, whether one is a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha or sannyasam, varnashrama dharma was created with this intention. Varnashrama dharma is not something which was meant to divide people and to fight each other. That was not the goal of varnashrama dharma. When Krishna discusses varnashrama dharma in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there what was the purpose of varnashrama dharma. Purpose of varnashrama dharma was that once you live a brahmachari life, first 25 years, if you live as a good brahmachari, in that brahmachari life, if you can develop the renunciation and knowledge required of controlling the senses, controlling the mind, then at the age of 25 years, in consultation with the spiritual master, you can decide whether you want into, if you are still require householder life or not. That is what the decision is made at that time. Not that at 25 I can go and get married straight away. No. The decision is, at the age of 25, the decision is made, consultation with the spiritual master. Spiritual master sees if the disciple or the brahmachari has acquired the sufficient strength in his mind to grow further, whether he can move on to vanaprastham and sannyasam straight away, or straight away to sannyasa ashram. That decision is taken. If he found that the person is not having had the control on his mind and control on his senses, or in other words, spiritually, if he hasn't made sufficient progress at that time, then he is allowed to marry and enter into householder life. This is how it is. Otherwise, it is not required. According to Shastra, one should go into spiritual. But everybody may not be able to do that. So it is in this way that Varnashrama Dharma is set up. Then, after Brahmachari Ashram, if one has not succeeded in getting the mind and senses under control, then he is allowed to marry. And in the marriage time in Grihastha Ashramam, one has been given the opportunity that in a regulated life, one can practice such a way that at the end of Grihastha Ashram, one can move into Vanaprastha Ashram. That means even in the householder life, if one has not succeeded in getting the mind and senses under control, then he is allowed to go into further tightening the belt, or in other words, engaging in severe austerities and penances in the Vanaprastha Ashram. And even after the Vanaprastha Ashram, if he has not succeeded in developing Krishna consciousness, in other words, what is he supposed to do? He should leave everything and go to the forest and enter into Sannyasa Ashram. This is how that set up. Uddhava at this point asked Krishna one question. Very interesting question. Uddhava said to Krishna that you have told me that Brahmachari Ashram, Grihastha Ashram, Vanaprastha Ashram and Sannyasa Ashram, four ashramas you have created. That is very good. And the goal of all this ashram is ultimately to become Krishna conscious. Because if you have not become Krishna conscious, ultimately all this ashram is also useless. It's no use at the end. So Uddhava asked Krishna that at the end of Sannyasa Ashram, if one has not become Krishna conscious, what he should do then? Because you said to me, Uddhava said to Krishna, Krishna, you told me that the purpose of Brahmachari Ashram is this, to become detached, renunciation, knowledge and Krishna consciousness. You didn't make it in Brahmachari, do it in householder life, in Grihastha Ashram. If you don't do it in Grihastha Ashram, do it in Vanaprastha Ashram. If you didn't make it in Vanaprastha Ashram, go to Sannyasa Ashram and do it. Then Uddhava asked, if you don't make it in Sannyasa Ashram also, what do you do? Krishna said, there is not much choice. Come back and take another body again in this world. That's the only option left for that person. This is how Vanashrama Dharma is so important. And Vanashrama Dharma is developed in this principle that the goal of Vanashrama Dharma is ultimately to develop Krishna consciousness. If it's not there, this Vanashrama Dharma is also useless. So coming back to this story of Mandadav, and Mandadav and this Saubhari Maharshi story, you can see that Saubhari's lesson we have to learn from this, that Saubhari lost a lot of his lifespan in this process of householder life. So if one could have avoided that, and at the same time, the same ninth canto, Amrish Maharaja, householder, is presenting to us what a devotee can reach, to what levels he can come to as a devotee. So varnam and ashramam is not an impediment in advancing spiritual life. What is causing problem is that our attitude in Krishna consciousness, that you can see from here, generally people have this feeling that, oh, Grihastha Ashram is finished. He is finished now. No chance of him becoming Krishna conscious. We condemn him and write him off once for all. It's quite often, it's natural everywhere. In many, many months, it is quite often. Sometimes you may be a serious student, but after a while, once you get married, then they tell you, oh, you can go now, have your householder life, finish all that and come back when you're ready for spiritual life. They'll say like that. And elsewhere also, it is quite common that sometimes you go into householder life, people start thinking, of course, it's also a fact of life, that once you become a householder, previously, every day you were at the Mangalarti. But as soon as you get married, or then you need the house, then you go to the all the other problems associated with house management, then you see only the devotee once in a month. Then it becomes later only for Janmashtami you may see him. If you ask him, oh, we have not seen you for a long time, Prabhu. Prabhu says, oh, what can I do? I know I'm a householder now. This is the answer you get. So that is not good. That is not the right householder. Householder doesn't mean that one has to give up all spiritual life. One has to be like Amrish Maharaj's spiritual life. So Amrish Maharaj, although householder, the mind was properly situated. In other words, in spite of all the other problems what he had, Amrish was very much fixed upon Krishna consciousness. So on the other hand, you see, Durvasa Muni and Saubhari, they were great sages, great austerities, penances, no wife, no problem, nothing. No family, nothing. But in spite of that, Krishna said to them that Amrish Maharaj, look at him, that he is a devotee. And that is what Krishna expects from people. So ashramam and varnam is not an impediment in spiritual life. What is impediment is our own attitude in Krishna consciousness, that we don't become seriously understand these things, then we become difficult, get into difficulties. Later on, in the same family of Solar dynasty, we have the story of Mandhadav. This Mandhadav later on performed penances. And that famous hill where he performed famous is known as Tirumandham Hill. That hill still exists. And Mandhadav left this world and went away. And in that process, there was another great personality appeared. Probably you know this story also. This is a very, very famous story in the Mahabharata as well as in the other Puranas also. In Markandeya Puranam also, I think this story is mentioned in detail. This is the story of one of the kings known as Trishangu. This Trishangu, he belongs to the same race. He comes later on. Trishangu, by now what has happened is, there was another great personality, our Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni and Vasishta, they were two powerful sages who lived at that time. They both come in Ramayana. Vasishta Maharshi is the sage who is associated with the Lord Ramchandra's family, and all along Vasishta Maharshi had a great role in Ramayana. Vishwamitra Maharshi also had an important role in Ramayana. You will find Vishwamitra Maharshi taking Lord Ramchandra, Lakshmana and others for the marriage arranged with the Janaka's daughter, all that thing. And that story we will see when we come to the story of Lord Ramchandra, Ramchandra's pastimes. So, somehow or the other, this Vishwamitra and Vasishta, they developed enmity each other. Enmity in the sense, both of them very, very powerful. Vasishta was powerful, Vishwamitra is also very powerful. You can imagine, when two powerful personalities become inimical each other, inimical in the sense, a certain problems in their relationship. Vasishta Muni had a cow by name Nandini. Vishwamitra was a king. In briefly, the story is, Vishwamitra went one day for hunting in the forest with his associates, went to Vasishta Muni's ashram. Vasishta Muni, being a sage, knowing very well that Vishwamitra was a king, received him nicely and arranged a fantastic feast for him in the ashramam. Arranged all in a very royal style. He organized everything. Vishwamitra Muni could not imagine that how come a sage like Vasishta, these sages normally when they live in the forest, they have nothing. They only have a place to sleep and they have got their yoga, then rest of the time they are in samadhi or engaged in spiritual life. What do they bother about? But some or the other, Vasishta had this sage Nandini, this cow Nandini, who provided everything for him. Eventually Vishwamitra wanted to find out the truth behind this. Vasishta told Vishwamitra, I have this cow Nandini who provides me everything what I need. So I have no problem in receiving any amount of guests any time, and in the best possible way I could receive them. Vishwamitra got attracted to the cow. He wanted to get the cow from Vasishta. Vasishta wouldn't agree to give it. And Vishwamitra eventually had a fight with Vasishta. Vishwamitra decided, all this Vasishta has become so powerful because of this yogic power. Let me do the same thing. He went to the forest. And he fought. And he started performing austerities and penances, became very, very powerful. And the result was that you will see many of the Vedic hymns, they were all revealed to these great sages. Vishwamitra and Vasishta has many, many Vedic hymns to their credit. Now, before we come to that, I forgot to mention this, that we were talking about Saubhari Maharshi. This Saubhari, what he has done, he has gone and studied Rigveda. Not only he studied Rigveda, he learned it to such an extent. You see, every mantra has its own potency in it. In other words, when you chant a particular mantra, from that what is known as Siddhi comes, mantra Siddhi, it is called, a perfection of that mantra. One has to achieve that. That is what, when you become, actually see the results of your chanting the mantra. So this Rigvedic hymns, which are very, very deep in meaning, understanding them is difficult, one thing. Apart from understanding the meaning itself is difficult. Because when they were revealed to the sages, the potency that has been packed into these mantras is so high. And to chant these mantras properly, you require a teacher who can teach you properly, correctly to chant. And unfortunately, due to the passing of time, this capacity to chant these different Vedic mantras have completely been more or less lost today. And still, there are still families who have still some understanding of this, But anyway, our Saubhari Maharshi mastered this Rigveda. That's what he did. So he is known as Rigveda Parangadam. In other words, his knowledge of Rigvedam was so high that with this Rigvedic hymns, what he could chant day after day after day, he acquired the spiritual strength from that. This is the, we should not underestimate the potency of the Vedic mantras. All the Vedic hymns in the Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam and all that, if it is chanted properly and if it is realized properly, the benefits from that, only Puranas will tell you what can come out of that. And our Saubhari Maharshi was a classical example of that. And it is only because of that, that even after engaging in such high sense gratification, that culture, what was developed within from the Rigvedic mantras, that has brought him back to his senses and he was able to take it back to it again so seriously. So coming back to the same way, in the case of our Mandharas also, later on, in the case of the children, what we were talking about, that the Vedic mantras have its own powerful nature. And this Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, both of them are responsible for the revelations of so many of these Vedic mantras. So you can imagine, to come to receive certain mantras from Krishna, especially the Vedic hymns, to be revealed through that particular sage, how much austerities and penances they would have performed to come to that stage. Vishwamitro Hrishi, it says like that, that first he was given the title as Hrishi. Hrishi means sage. So Vishwamitra was not satisfied. That determination of that Kshatriya's mind was coming out. So he said that, I am not satisfied with this title. Everybody should call me Brahmarshi, he said. Brahmarshi, in other words, a sage who has realized Brahman. So he went back to the forest, again performed penances and austerities. Krishna has no option except to give him that title because of his penances as Brahmarshi. And like this, all these sages you will find with different titles. Vasishtha Maharshi, Vishwamitra Muni, they are all these kind of personalities. But in spite of all that, some uneasiness developed between Vishwamitra and Vasishtha. So when this uneasiness developed between Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, it has caused a lot of problems. So it came to such a stage that Vasishtha and Vishwamitra started cursing each other. And Vasishtha was cursed to become a crane, and Vasishtha in turn cursed Vishwamitra to become a duck. So both of them got into these two birds' bodies. And you can imagine that they had to live in the two birds' bodies for quite a long time till Lord Brahma came and released them from that body. How did he do that? They gave this body to Vasishtha Maharshi. He was given another life as the son of the Apsaras woman Urvashi, as a children of Mitravarana. And from a pot, he came out later on. That is, it's another whole story behind it. Mahabharata also talks about that, how Vasishtha got this second body, second birth again in Vasishtha Muni. So when this important thing is to remember is, Vasishtha and Vishwamitra had got into this serious confrontation between each other. So this Trishangu, we were talking about the Solar dynasty, this King Trishangu. Trishangu wanted to perform a sacrifice, and he told Vasishtha Muni to assist, being the priest of the family and Purohit. Vasishtha Muni refused. He said to Trishangu, no, I can't do it. He said, why? Trishangu wanted to go with his body, with this material body, to the heavenly planets to enjoy there. So his desire developed in his mind like that, and he wanted to go there, and Vasishtha Muni said no. When Vasishtha Muni said no, he approached his children, Vasishtha Muni's sons, who were also powerful sages, to assist him in performing the sacrifice, because these sages, they have mastered the Vedas to such an extent. Without their help, you can't perform these sacrifices. It was known to them. So as soon as, and this is the chanting Vedic hymns and perfecting them was their main business in life. Nothing else. Everything else came later. That is how this Vedic tradition survived so long in this world. When Vedavyasa Maharshi divided the Vedas into Samavedam, Yajurvedam, Atharvana Vedam, and Rigvedam, the four Vedas, his intention was that this should stay in this world forever. You should not lose this Vedic tradition. That was the goal of that. But all these incidents have happened much before that. At time there was only one Veda. And what we find here is that the Vishwamitra Vasishtha confrontation was getting worse, and they got into these problems. And when they were later on released, that Trishangu approached Vasishtha to perform the sacrifice. Vasishtha refused, his sons also refused. Both father has refused, sons also refused. When both of them refused, our Trishangu realized that Vishwamitra has having problem with Vasishtha. So why not approach Vishwamitra, he thought. So he approached Vishwamitra, and Vishwamitra was more than eager to help, because he heard that Vasishtha Muni has refused help. As usual in this world, everything is like that, isn't it? You find who is the enemy, is the enemy, is friend. That's the situation there. So he went up to Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra organized a sacrifice. Both of them were very capable. Vishwamitra organized the sacrifice and sent the Trishangu to the heavenly planet with his body, along with this in his own body, in his existing body. When he got there, Indra saw him coming to the heavenly planet. And as usual, Indra's business, he doesn't want anybody having anything like him. He finds it very difficult to accept that. So when Trishangu came there, he asked him, why have you come? He said, Vishwamitra had sent me here. Go back, he said. Kicked him out from there. And he came upside down to this world back again from the heavenly planet. So when he was coming back, he was calling his spiritual master, Vishwamitra, from there, from the sky. Vishwamitra realized what has happened. Indra has sent him back. Vishwamitra, with his tapashakti, or the potency of the austerities, he created another set of heavenly planets in the creation. And he told Trishangu, you will stay there, you won't come down, he said. You have a full set of new heavenly planets there existing for you. When Indra saw this, he couldn't bear it. He thought that by sending Trishangu back, at least he has solved the problem. But on the other hand, the problem has become much more serious now. Because it's so serious that Indra is one personality who is thinking always in these three planetary systems. I am managing the upper planetary system. Heavenly planets is in my control. He is not too bothered what we do here in London or in Paris or New York. It doesn't bother Indra so much. After all, he knows that this place has its own limitations. Nor he is bothered about the lower planetary system. But when it comes to higher planetary system, Indra gets worried. So when he found that there is a competitor now, that he really felt that Vishwamitra is not going to give up easily. Trishangu was sent back, and he has created these heavenly planets there. Not only created heavenly planets, he created what is known as Saptarshi Mandalam, the seven sages' special positions. And all the other associated places related to the special gardens of the heavenly planets. And next thing he was going to create were the Apsaras women and all the other inhabitants of the heavenly planets like demigods. It has come to that stage. If that has happened, Indra realized that there will not be many people wanting to come to my planets anymore. There will be more people who may like to go there as well. So competition was getting, isn't it, the business. So Indra decided at that point, now it's not working out with Vishwamitra. So if this is not working, what do we all do when something is not working with somebody? We become friendly now then, isn't it? So our Vishwamitra, Indra also followed this. Indra is known for this. When with Maharaj Rishabhadev and Indra, when the problem developed, initially Indra stopped the rain and started giving trouble to Rishabhadev. But when he realized that Rishabhadev can manage himself, Indra came with his daughter Jayanti and offered her in marriage to Rishabhadev. That's what he did. So this Indra's nature is always like that. When he finds that he can't handle it, then he follows this process, tries to become friendly and develop a friendly nature. So that's what he did to Vishwamitra also. He came to Vishwamitra and told him that let's not compete each other, that let Trishangu stay there, but at least don't create any more Apsaras women or demigods there. That's all going to cause problems for me. Vishwamitra was so powerful, he could do that. So Vishwamitra agreed at that point to refrain from continuing with his creation of the heavenly planetary system. So this Trishangu stands there, and his location is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam as is outside the Vaishvanara path. That's where he survives there. Now, in relation to that, Trishangu had a son whose story is well known in the Srimad Bhagavatam and Ramayana. He is known as Harishchandra. This story is everybody knows. Most of the people must have read this. But still, because it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm still trying to repeat that. Harishchandra, his wife Chandramati and his son Rohit. So these family members, Harishchandra's position was, he was known for his honesty and truthfulness. This honesty and truthfulness is something which requires a deeper understanding. What is honesty means? Honesty in this world, when we refer to, if you know in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning, when we talk about Satyam, Satyam Param Dhimahi, that is how the first verse finishes, isn't it? Why Satyam Param Dhimahi? That is also another interesting question. Why is it called Satyam Param Dhimahi? What is this Satyam Param? That is a question always one is supposed to ask. We all talk about Satyam, Satyam, Satyam. Satyam means basically, in the material world, when we talk about Satyam, Satyam is nothing but an experience in this world. That means truthfulness means, based on our experience in this world, we form certain conclusions. For example, you can analyze it like this. The truth of this world, what you accept as truth, need not necessarily be the ultimate truth. Ultimate truth is something different. For example, you see the snakes and the rats. Snakes are very fond of eating the rats. Anyone who knows the snakes closely, they'll know these things. Snakes like to eat the rats. So, when the snake is trying to eat the rat is going through severe pain and it is death. That is the reality for the rat. But for the snake, the question is filling its belly. It is hungry. So, by nature's arrangement, the creation is such that what is truth for the rat is not truth for the snake. Because the rat wants to save its life. But unfortunately, the creation is such that snake is entitled to eat the rat because it's its food. It is allowed to eat the rat. For the snake, the reality, the truth is that rat is its food, And for the rat, the reality is death is coming to it. So whom do you blame now? Can you blame the snake for eating the rat? Can you blame the rat for trying to escape from that? This is material world. This is the nature of the material world. Look at this way. Tiger and the deer. As soon as you see, even if you have seen directly, I'm sure most of people must have seen on the television at least. They show these things that the tigers, the deer is running, being chased by the tiger in the forest. Most of these programs, they'll show you the programs related to the wildlife. If you watch them, you'll see the tiger is hunting the deer. Now, sometimes you think compassion for the tiger, for the deer. Why? It's going to be eaten by this tiger, ferocious tiger. But if you look at it from an impartial view, you can see the tiger has every right to eat the deer because its food, nature has arranged for him to eat. So tiger has its right. That is the satyam for the tiger is the deer is my food. Whereas the satyam for the deer is that death is standing in front of me who's trying to eat me. So whom do you support? Whom can you say that? What is the truth in these things? So these things are relative truths in this material world according to material nature's creation itself. And exactly the same way, the rich exploit the poor, the strong exploit the weak. This is how material world is created. And these things will never go. Just as in the case of tiger and the deer and the snake and the rat, in human society also, these things will continue to exist. You can keep on adjusting and managing and changing and trying to make it equal, this, that and the other. It never happens. Why? Because by the arrangement of the material nature, this world is a place of relative truth. And this is precisely the reason why in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning, Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, Satyam Param Dhimahi. I meditate on that form of Param Satyam, not the Satyam of this world. The Satyam of this world is all Maya's Satyam. That Satyam has no meaning. That is why he used that word Satyam Param Dhimahi. That is why, while referring to Krishna, Vedavyasa Maharshi actually wanted to say Krishnam Param Dhimahi. That was actually what he intended to say. But instead he says, Satyam Varam Dhimahi, because he knew Bhinna Rujirhi Logaha, that the people in this world, if you say Krishnam Varam Dhimahi, people will start thinking that it is a sectarian thing. I have nothing to do with it. So people will start looking at it. That is the nature of this world. They don't want to identify with a person straight away. So before we come to Krishna, that in the 10th canto, Vedavyasa Muni begins Srimad Bhagavatam with Satyam Param Dhimahi. So this Satyam is Param. That is not the Satyam of this world. So when in discussing in the same way, in this institute, in this case also, our Harishchandra was a person who was attracted to the Satyam of this world, truthfulness of this world. And that is what was causing the problem. So if you read through this Harishchandra's life, you will see that he was the son of Trishango. He became an object of the, in this tussle, between Vasishtha and Vishwamitra, he got cut up. And that is a full story of Harishchandra comes in the last part of that next chapter. And later on you will see that Harishchandra tried to protect his Satyam of this world, but the Satyam of this world has no standing. Eventually, in that process, Harishchandra had to go through a lot of difficulties in his life. And the other demigods wanted to test his strength of the commitment, and that all things are explained in the next chapter. And then it continues for the next king who comes in, Sagara story comes in. And then after that, we move on to the Lord Ramchandra story. So we will go through that next Sunday. And if there's any questions or comments, please.
you talked about the ashrams.
Yes.
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 Vanaprastham work for you.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
It's a progressive thing usually, isn't it? Vanaprastham, then sannyas, grahastha. It's like you actually learn from grahastha life, you try and become Krishna conscious, and then vanaprastham, you go to study scriptures, visit the holy places. Mm. And then sannyas, you develop some detachment, complete detachment. So I'm trying to understand, related to what Yudhava said there.
Yes.
To say, oh, if that doesn't work, you try this.
Yes. The correct principle behind Varnashrama Dharma is like this, that these four ashramas, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas, is set up. The goal of that is Krishna consciousness. If you don't achieve Krishna consciousness at the end of it, this Varnashrama Dharma is all useless. What is the point? This is the main principle behind it. Now, the way it is set up is that if one is trained in the Brahmachari life properly, there is a strong possibility that he would not get attracted to the householder life in this world. That's the goal, because householder life is a concession for a Brahmachari. It's given to him. That he may not get attracted to the happiness of this world from the very beginning. That means if 25 years, if he has developed sufficient, if he has lived a proper Brahmachari life under the guidance of a proper spiritual master, the possibility is that by the end of that Brahmachari ashram, he would have developed enough renunciation. He would have come to his senses to see things, because most of us, we go and jump into this householder life without knowing what is involved in that. Only after getting into the well, you realize it, where you have landed. It is true with man or woman. It's like that. And only after a few years, you start thinking, now I've got everything in my bank. And then, like a mortgage, it is holding on to your neck throughout life. And then you want everything in life. All the desires comes along with that. You want to be happy. You want your wife to be happy, children to be happy, everybody wants to be happy, but you yourself are not happy at the process. So this is the problem. So an intelligent person, the Vedic tradition is that an intelligent person, if he can see these things in advance in life, before he get into that problems, it is better that he does that. If he can get that opportunity to do that. But there will be only very few people in this world who will have that good fortune of living that brahmachari life to higher places. So the householder ashram is not that everybody has to go into householder ashram. Only those, that is a decision made at the end of brahmachari ashram. Whether he feels, can I continue like this? I have the strength, spiritual strength. Or do I have that realizations in me or Krishna consciousness in me that desire may not come back to me again to go into the householder life, ashram. So based on that decision is made at that time. It comes in the 11th canto in detail later. A decision is made at that time whether to enter into householder life or not. Now, if he enters into householder life, that doesn't mean that everything is lost, that he still has a choice there. That in householder life, if he can develop Krishna consciousness, if he follows it properly, there's a possibility of building up Krishna consciousness there also. But the difficulty in householder life is that because of the dealings with the material nature is more than anywhere else, unlike in a brahmachari ashram or a sannyasi. Brahmachari or sannyasi, what do they need in this world? Their needs are very, very limited, isn't it? They have, they, as long as they get a prasadam and a place to sleep, I think more or less most of them are satisfied. But householder's life is difficult because you have entered into an ashram where, we discussed this in the 7th canto, that the householder's requirements are different. You need a house, you need money to maintain the family, you need all these things. So, but in the middle of all that, you have to cultivate Krishna consciousness also. So rarely some personalities like Ambarish Maharaj have succeeded in that. But if we don't make it, Ambarish Maharaj, you can see, he had the highest knowledge, highest renunciation, and he was in the householder life. Because Krishna consciousness has built up strongly in that. So if the same thing happens in householder life, that somehow or the other, if he succeeds in building up Krishna consciousness, then he can move on to sannyasa ashram from there. And he doesn't have to go through even vanaprastha ashram. But if he has not succeeded, he still, because householder life is a dangerous place in the sense that is where all our bad habits builds up. You can't get up in the morning. You want first class prasadam. You want comfortable bed. You want everything best. And you are not willing for any austerities. And you want spiritual life also. How does that work? Difficult, isn't it? So that is where the problem comes. That's why renunciation and detachment is necessary. One who is not willing to give up attachment to this body, bodily comforts, it's difficult to advance spiritually. So therefore, it says there that at the end of householder life, you have not succeeded, move into the forest with your wife and practice severe austerities and penances. You read in the Bhagavatam how severe it has to be. I don't know which forest you can go now. It's only the Nottingham Forest, I think, what's left behind. But, Effingham Forest then. Yeah, so this is the forest what's left today. So this is all in the Shastram, it says like this, that this is the way to live a life, that you go into the forest, perform vanaprastha ashram, and if the senses are not under control and the Krishna consciousness is not developed, he should leave his wife home and go into the forest and engage in further austerities and penances more than what he has already been doing there. So basically the intention is to get the senses under control and the mind under control. This is the goal of all these things. And to get the mind and senses under control, there is only one way to perform austerities in life. The sages have succeeded, Dhruva Samini, all these great personalities, that's why they did that. So if you don't, so if the senses are not coming under control, mind is not coming under control, the message is that you are not austere enough in life. You're not able to do that. So in sannyasa ashram, you've got the last opportunity to do that, to perform this, execute these severe penances. It's not a joke, all these things. It's not just changing clothes and calling each other, I am taken this sannyasa, I have taken grihastha, I have taken a brahmachari. But it has all its own, in detail, Krishna talks about it later in the Bhagavatam. But whatever it is, at the end of the day, the goal is Krishna consciousness. And for developing Krishna consciousness properly, renunciation is necessary. Without renunciation and knowledge, it's not developed properly. It will develop, some kind of Krishna consciousness will build up. But proper Krishna consciousness builds up when one becomes renounced and detached to this material world. Ultimately, to break away from this material world This is the process what is recommended in the Vedic literature. So that is how these four ashramas have come into existence. In the olden days, the system was that brahmacharis were trained so nicely. At the very early age, they caught them, 5 or 6 years. And about 20 years good training for them with the spiritual master would not allow them. After that, majority of them were able to leave the household life and go into the spiritual life seriously. But as time changed and with the advancement of our age, Kali Yugam, things have become different. We have become more relaxed on everything. We have made concessions. So our life has also become different in that way. That's why in the generally it is said that there is no brahmachari, no sannyasi, no householder in Kali Yugam. Strictly speaking, there is nobody there like that. But still, to keep that tradition, the acharyas have kept the system going so that let it not be completely lost in this world. Let the system still continue. So that at least people will realize that there is a system called a division in the society. That was the goal of maintaining this principle in this world still. But the goal of Arnashrama Dharma is Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, one has to become perfection in Krishna consciousness. And that's only possible by following this process of Arnashrama Dharma. It helps to do that. But as time passes, everything changes in this world. Nothing will stay in this world as it is. Even if one acharya has established one thing in this world, after 10 years, if you look at it, it will have changed. It won't stay the same. That's the way the world is. That you can't change. You can't change the situation. That is why even after many, many great personalities came to this world, they preached God consciousness. But the very followers today, they don't follow that. They have concocted, and created their own philosophy, and they say, we are following him. But in reality, nobody is following them. It is true in every religion. It's happening. Other processes also. So that is something you can't change. That's the nature of the world. So that is why, similarly, these four varnas and four ashramas also, although it was set up originally with some intentions, over a period of time, it got deteriorated and it changed its purpose. And people started thinking that the goal is something different, the purpose is different, and then they try to adjust everything. And in the modern world also, it's difficult to bring that back, the original purpose for which it was set up and how it was set up. To bring it back to this world is difficult because people just doesn't have the strength or the capacity to handle that kind of lifestyle. Today, everyone is busy with earning his livelihood to such an extent we have come to where is the time for spiritual life. So this is the problem.
In our day-to-day life, especially, should we relate that to Param Niyamai, or should we sort of adjust ourselves, Satyam, like you explained about the snake and the rat, or tiger and the deer, should we sort of deal with truth as it comes along, or should we just relate it with Param Niyamai?
Obviously, one has to think Satyam Param is the real Satyam. These are not Satyams. What we are experiencing here and what we talk about here is not Satyam Param. It is the Satyam of this world. Maya Satyam it is. So whatever you call it, you can say anything about it. This Satyam, because what is Satyam? Satyam means only there is only one Satyam, and that's Krishna. Everything else is what we call as Satyam is not Satyam in reality. We call this as Satyam because temporarily for our mind, we feel due to the influence of Maya, we accept this as Satyam. But in from the higher understanding, higher principles, none of this is Satyam. Because when we were thrown into this material world, as I was saying in the beginning, we were just thrown into it. Karma has brought us here in different bodies, in different places, in different conditions. Now in these conditions, we are interacting with each other. And we are trying to tell each other, oh, you should be honest, Prabhu. You have to be very honest. And Prabhu is telling me also, oh, you have to be very honest, Prabhu. You are telling a lie. Like this we are arguing each other. All this has no meaning because you are in a relative world. In this relative world, what is truth? As I was telling you, for the snake, the rat is the truth, my food. And for the rat, the death is the truth standing in front of him. So they have been thrown into that situation by the arrangement of material nature. Similarly, just like the snake and the rat and the tiger and the deer, we were also thrown into this with our karma along with it, saying to us, go and suffer your karma, enjoy your suffer, whatever it is. And in this relationship, we are trying to tell each other, we have to be honest, Prabhu. You have to be honest about, you know. So honesty starts from somewhere else. Honest, real honesty is actually in relationship with Krishna. If you give up, so that is why Srimad Bhagavatam in the beginning itself, why he said, why Vedavya said this Satyam Param Dimahi? Because that is the topic discussed in the Bhagavatam. The real truth is what we are discussing here. In other words, what he meant to say was Krishnam Param Dimahi. That was the word he would have used. And if you read Srimad Bhagavatam throughout, you will see that is what Vedavyas had in his mind also, to say Krishnam Param Dhimahi. But instead he used Satyam Param, because if you say Krishnam Param, many people will say straight away, oh no, that's not for me, that's somebody else. Whereas if you say Satyam Param Dhimahi, at least people will read it and think about it. And that is why it was specifically differentiated there.
Yeah, asking this question to Sivaram Maharaj.
Yeah.
Satyam Param
Dhimahi. Yeah.
Who is Satyam Param Dhimahi? He didn't say about Krishna. He explained to me that no. The beginning what he says, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's Satyam Param Dhimahi. That's what he directly mentioned Krishna. You go really at Bhagavad.
Yes.
As you said, maybe they are also saying that to us.
Yes.
He says Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yes, yes.
That's Satyam Param
Dhimahi. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
How, if you understand what the spirit of the soul is and that you're not the body, then the question that the Guru was asking about, you know, truth, what's relative to truth, doesn't that all fall into place when one understands these bases?
Right? See, understanding that I am not this body, theoretically and practically, is different. When you say that, oh, I understand that I'm not this body, that's only a theoretical understanding. But when it comes to practice, our activities will change. At the moment, theoretically I understand I'm not this body, but that's not good enough. But to understand it practically, the realize it is more important than understanding it theoretically. Yeah. So if you realize that you are not this body, not if you understand you are not this body, if you realize you are not this body, then you are realizing the truth. You see? That is why it's called science of self-realization, isn't it? Why we call science of self-realization? Because at the moment, just like this relative truths of this world, we are also identifying with the body. We are not come out of it. As much as you come to realize that I am not this body, rather I am spirit soul, when you come to that spiritual platform, then you are released from the relative truths. You are more closer to the absolute truth. You know what I mean? Yeah? You have to think about it. If you want to understand a little bit deeper about this, in Chaitanya Charitamrita in Madhya Leela, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talking about Atmarama verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, he gives a detailed explanation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells to Sanatana Goswami about it. He says, why is Srimad Bhagavatam so important in the sense that why it is talking about the absolute truth, not about the relative truth. And there Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami that Atmarama verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke about that for a very, very long time in discussing with Sanatana Goswami. There he mentions there that the four Kumaras, Gopis, Rukmini Devi, they all saw Krishna in different ways, isn't it? They all got attracted to Krishna in different ways. Kumaras smelled the tulsi leaves from Krishna's body and got attracted to Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami heard about Krishna and got attracted to him. Rukmini Devi heard about the qualities of Krishna and got attracted to him. Gopi saw the beautiful form of Krishna and got attracted to him. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says there, in that commentary on the in the Almarama verse, he says there that this attraction for absolute truth is like that. You do never know what will attract you to the absolute truth. Krishna's absolute nature or the absolute position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is like this, that you get attracted to one of his features. And when you get attracted to those features and you become advanced on that path, automatically the relative truths in this world become insignificant. And that is that process. That's why that why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talked about this Almarama verse in so detail to Sanatana Goswami. The reason for this was to make Sanatana Goswami realize that Srimad Bhagavatam has this one specific nature in it, that it only talks about the absolute truth. It's not bothered about the... You will never see in the Bhagavatam anywhere how to do business in this world. It's not mentioned anywhere. Or anything else related to the matters of this world. It's all related to what that will take you in the spiritual path into the higher goal, up to the ultimate goal. That's why it is mentioned like that. So when you say that, oh, if I realize that, if I understood that I'm not this body, understanding is one thing, but realizing is something different. And there you will see Mahaprabhu explains a lot more things in relationship to that.
You mentioned earlier regarding Siddhi mantras.
Yes.
Can you comment on the Maha Mantra and the verses from Srimad Bhagavatam in relation to Siddhi mantras?
When I said siddhis, what I was trying to say is that majority of all these yoga siddhis or mystic powers is easily accessible to many of these great sages. They attain that. Why? Because they follow chanting these Vedic hymns. From them they get the strength for that. And the difficulty is to explaining these mantras. That's the most difficult thing. Like Rigvedam, for example. Something like, how many things? I think about 18 or 20,000 Vedic hymns are there. Now, if you go into any big library and you can take where there is some Sanskrit literature stored, take some of the these Vedic mantras, Rigvedic mantras, for example, and see their commentaries on that. You will be amazed that where does these realizations come from, this mantra? How this mantra has managed to give all this through these few words in these hymns? That is how potent they are. So it is not very easy in one's life, unless one is very, very dedicated to spiritual life, in studying and chanting them properly. It is only by chanting that you become perfect in that. And for chanting properly, you have to train your tongue when you are very, very small. Early days, you have to start that. And you need somebody who has got that perfection in chanting. Because it's very easy to go out and chant in the wrong way also. So if you do like that, this is known as upasana. Your upasana, you are doing your upasana towards a particular mantra, what you are chanting. If you do like that, over a certain period of time, you will become capable of many, many things in these siddhis will automatically come to you without too much effort, difficulty. So Saubari Maharshi's case I was mentioning, that Saubari was expert in Rigvedam. Rigvedam, he mastered it. Therefore, he is referred to in the Bhagavatam as Rigveda Parangada. He was expert of the Rigvedic science. And similarly, there are in the sages in Yajurvedam also. Yajnavalkya Muni, well known on the Yajurvedam. He was so well known, if I say to you about his history, Yajnavalkya Muni's history. He lived 60,000 years, Yajnavalkya Muni. And in earlier, one of the Vedavyas time, Yajnavalkya Muni was one of the earlier Vedavyas disciple. So Yajnavalkya Muni, what did he do? He said one day, He was a little intelligent than others who were learning the same Yajurveda from Vedavyas. So all these students were sitting together, and Vedavyas told them that for a particular sacrifice, you should train up yourself by studying these certain mantras. He explained to them. So this Yajnavalkyamuni, what did he do? He told Vedavyas Maharshi, that I don't need any help, I already know what is needed, how to chant. Because they were into this so seriously, so deeply involved. So when he said that, Vedavyas thought that he has become a little bit proud about his knowledge of the Vedic literature, particularly Yajurveda. Yajurveda was the one he has mastered. So Vedavyas told him that I don't want you to be here anymore as a disciple. I have given you everything, but you have become too proud, he said. So Yajnavalkya also is not a very character who will give up easily. He told him that vomit everything here now, what you have learned. So the knowledge what he has gone in has come in the form of a vomit outside. He vomited it outside, the whole thing. And after believing that, so he said, I've lost now everything. He went out from the ashram. And he started performing penances, glorifying the sun god. And glorifying sun god appeared to him at the end by his penances. These were such personalities they were, all of these, Yajnavalkya and Vishwamitra and Vasishtha and all of them. That's why these sages are the basis of Vedic culture. On them everything has been built up. So Yajnavalkya Muni told the sun, demigod or the predominating deity of the sun planet, that I want to know the Yajurvedam from you, he said. So he taught him a Yajurvedam known as Shukla Yajurvedam. Shukla Yajurvedam means that in the Yajurvedam, two branches came out. One is known as Krishna Yajurvedam, which is the black Yajurvedam, and the other one is the Shukla Yajurvedam, white Yajurvedam. So Krishna Yajurvedam, which was originally vomited out by him, all his other disciples, because you can't take it back again, the knowledge is lying there in the form of vomit. So he said to his disciples, you all take the form of birds, because birds can eat the vomit, isn't it? The body is suitable for that. So they all took the form of birds and ate all this vomit inside. That is how Krishna Yajurvedam stayed in this world. It came back to these birds inside. This knowledge has come back to them. The vomit what was thrown out came back. And our Yajnavalkya didn't study Krishna Yajurvedam. Went and studied, got Shukla Yajurvedam back from him. And he practiced Shukla Yajurvedam. So there's another branch which comes from the Shukla Yajurvedam also exists among the Brahmanas. That is still studied. It's still there. These things are available still. Shukla Yajurvedam is there. Krishna Yajurvedam is also there. Now, When they took the form of the birds, what form did they take? They took the form of Titri birds. It's a type, one type of bird. You can just take it like that. Titri birds. I don't know what the English word is. Titri birds, they call them. So these Titri birds who ate this Yajurvedam thrown out by Yajnavalkya Muni, later on got back into life again. And that became what is known as Taittiriya Upanishad. So out of the 10 major Upanishads, this Taittiriya Upanishad has come out like that. Because it was eaten by Titri birds, it is called as Taittiriya Upanishad. So you can see the strength of all these Vedic literature, how powerful they were, and how the sages have spent years and years in developing this knowledge from the Vedic literature. And Taittiriya Upanishad, Isha Kena Katha Prashna Munda Mandukya Taittiri, it is the 7th major. Out of the 10 major Upanishads, there's total 108. Out of the 10 are commented by Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya and others. And out of these 10, is the 7th Upanishad is these Taittiriya Upanishads. So they have written commentaries on all these Upanishads. And that is all the basis of the Vedic tradition. So in relationship with now our Mahamantra, Krishna consciousness, that all these things we can talk today. None of us have the capacity nor the understanding, nor the teacher to teach us all these things. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew these things, where this is heading to. The world is going for. So knowing very well and knowing our situation, just like a good doctor prescribes the right medicine for the patient, he decided that this is the process for us. Chant Krishna's name and attain perfection in that way through this process of chanting holy name, Krishna's holy name. And in no way one should think that, oh, because I couldn't study any of this Vedic literature that I missed out everything. No, we haven't missed out anything. If you chant the holy name of Krishna, the potency, because Krishna has put the potency into the holy name for the age of Kali. Then Namnamagari Bhuda Nija Sarva Shakti. Why Sarva Shakti? Because he knew the customers are like this. So what can you do? If you give them difficult thing to purchase, they won't be able to buy it. So knowing very well, he has mentioned that Mahaprabhu says that you just chant the holy name. Holy name will give you the spiritual perfection, what you require in this short span of life. That is why, that is the perfection of the holy name. But why we have to say all these things is, if, why we worry about Upanishads and all that, is that to give us the understanding that this tradition of Vedic culture is not something came into existence yesterday or day before or a few years ago. It has been existing from time immemorial. And it continued through the sages and these great sages who protected them. And it stayed in this planet for so long a time, in spite of so many upheavals, it still survived here. What does that show? It shows that if Krishna wants to stay something here, it will stay. Nobody can take it away. And similarly, if Krishna doesn't want that to stay, it will not stay. So something what is genuine and original will always stay. Something which is artificial and concocted will struggle hard to survive. That is the way message from that. Okay. All glory Srila Prabhupada.